With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week's pod comes once again from the BFI South Bank in London, where I host my monthly live MK3D shows. The most recent one, as always, was a packed show, so we've split it across two podcasts. Next week, we'll hear from actor Monica Dolan, star of the awards-fated Cyrano and The Wonderful Days of the Bagnall Summer, and West Side Story star Rachel Zegler, who arrived hot-foot from the set of Snow White. But this week, my guests are broadcaster and critic Anna Smith, giving us a rundown of the recent Girls on Film Awards, and Harry Woodliff, director of Only You and True Things, the latter of which opens in the UK next week. So sit back and enjoy a front row seat at MK3D, live from the BFI South Bank.
In the words of old musical song, you wouldn't believe the day we've had. How is everybody? Oh, wow, that was actually more lively than usual. There's a group of students in from Exeter University Film Studies who have been here on a field trip, and they were here yesterday doing stuff at the BFI and University. How's it gone? What was your favourite bit? I spent several hours in the freezing cold showing these reprobates around the film highlights of London Soho, but no, their favourite part of the field trip so far was fucking Batman. Anyway, we've got a great show for you tonight. We've had a bit of a day, but we're all here. What was it? What's the phrase? It's squeaky bum time earlier on, but everything is fine. We're going to start with the other thing that's bothering me. I'll say this now, just because my hair is just not doing what I want it to do. And I know there are bigger problems, but I've got to that point in my life when I've turned into William Hartnell, you know, the first Doctor Who. And it used to be that when I did this, it was like rocking and it was like a bit James Dean, and then it went Richard Nixon, which I thought was, I now have turned into the first Doctor Who. And it's, and I know everyone may not, but a bad hair, I cannot get the sides of it to go down, and I cannot get the top to go up, and I'm going really, really bald. Thank you. Would have been better if it happened earlier on, but thank you very much. Yeah, anyway, so, but look, hey, I'm a professional. I'm struggling through. As I said, we've had a bit of a funny day. Ask the audience. We did this thing, you know, usually, as always, we're just asking people to tweet in questions. We had a few in. Are we going to do the microphone-y thing or not? Or do we have a microphone-y thing? If we have a microphone-y thing, we might do some live in the audio, but I don't know whether we do. So, this came in from Lisa G. Is Lisa G in the audience? Where? Oh, hello. How are you going? Who is your favourite Batman? I mean, no, wait. Who is your favourite Batman? I mean, I know it's Adam West, but hypothetically, could Robert Pattinson usurp him? So, have you seen the new Batman? Oh, and... Okay, that was kind of, a kind 3 out of 5. It was their best part of the field trip. That makes my walking tour of Soho like one and a half out of five. Okay, was it the length? Okay, okay, fine. Has anyone seen a film in 4DX? Okay, you know, 3 hours of 4DX. I'm surprised you can walk. I thought that Pattinson was actually really good. I thought it was the most vampire-y thing he's done since Twilight, and I love Twilight, always will love Twilight. And I thought, yeah. And I thought he was actually pretty decent. Plus, it's not just me that thinks this. The Penguin, right? If you've seen the film, Colin Farrell is the Penguin. And he's, you know, unrecognisable. And it's a really brilliant role. And I just feel like taking a photograph of Colin Farrell and sending it to Jared Leto and going, oi, there. You know, that's somebody using makeup to benefit the role rather than, you know, just showing off to the awards judges. So I liked it. I think controversially, I'm going to say that at the moment, Robert Pattinson is my favourite Batman. Not necessarily the film, but I think he is a very good, I think he's a very, very good Batman. And partly because I still love him from Twilight. Okay, Noah Keat. Noah? Either here or very quiet. What is your favourite form of film journalism? Radio, newspaper, TV, podcast, or live events? Nick, so I do radio, I do TV, I do newspaper, I do podcasts, I do live events. Which one are my best? Live events. Nicely saved. This from Jonah Tash. Is Jonah Tash here? Where are you, Jonah? Oh, hello. How you doing? What did you think? This is very specific, Jonah. I'm going to come back to you on this. What did you think about the visual metaphors in The Power of the Dog? And should Jane Campion, I love the fact you're on first name terms. Do you know her personally?
Yeah, actually, yes.
Oh. I knew this, it was the whole day, like literally from 6 o'clock this morning, it's been like this. How do you know, Jane?
Friend of a friend.
Oh, okay, friend of a friend. Okay. I'm friend of a friend of somebody who knows Leonardo DiCaprio, all right? But I don't call him Leo. Okay. Jason Isaacs, does he count as a friend of a friend of Leo? Anyway, fine. What do you think about the visual metaphors in Power of the Dog, and should Jane Campion win the Oscar for Best Director? So, to the second part of that, yes, and I think she will win the Oscar for Best Director. On the subject of the Power of the Dog itself, however, I don't know that it's quite as great as everyone else thinks it is. Now, I know that people love it, and I think she will win Best Director, and deservedly so, because it is brilliantly directed. I still think Belfast will win Best Film at the Oscars. I mean, I know all the bookies are saying it's going to be Power of the Dog. When you said the visual metaphors, what were you referring? Were you referring to the mountains and the dog, or were you referring to anything other specifically? Okay. Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, okay, fine. I mean, it was just one of those things where I thought, well, what do I think of the visual? I mean, all her films are so rich, even the ones that I don't like. All her films are so, I mean, you know, I love In the Cut. I can't stand the piano, but everybody loves the piano. I always remember Simon Mayo's description of the piano was, "Welcome to New Zealand, where it's raining." But I think she will win Best Director, and I think deservedly she will win Best Director. But I still think that Best Film is going to go to Belfast. Do you think it's going to win Best Film?
I think it will.
Okay, I've got a bet with Boyd Hilton at the moment. I think it's whoever loses takes the other one out for a pizza, so it's fairly high stakes. So he's convinced that he's got. I I am still going for Belfast as best film. But you know, I have this thing that I'm not allowed to bet. I was brought up a Methodist, and I only ever bet once. Everyone knows this story, but I'll do a very short version of it. I was on the radio on Radio 5. I said, I know what the five things are going to win: best picture, best screenplay, best director, best actor, best actress. And Danny Baker said, oh, you should put a bet on it. So I went, well, I don't bet because I'm a Methodist. He said, well, you should do it, because this was even before the nominations were announced. So I did put a bet on it. I bet like 100 quid or something. And then I forgot about it. And then the nominations came out and I was right. And then the Oscars happened and I was right. I got all five of them. And I went into the radio the next day and Danny said, those choices that you came up with, did they come up? I went, yeah, they did. Yeah. And he went, how much did you bet? I don't know, 100 quid or something. He said, what did you win? I went, oh, like, I don't know, 200 quid, 300 quid or something. And Danny said, did you not do an accumulator? And I, on Radio 5, the BBC sports station, said, what's an accumulator? I went into that show, £200 up. I came out £15,500 down because I hadn't. And I think that was God's way of telling me that I shouldn't have bet. You know? Not that you're going to lose, but you're going to win really, really badly and painfully. So anyway, let's see. I still think Belfast, but then, hey, what do I know? Okay, I'm going to show you a trailer for a new film which is coming out at the beginning of April. There is also, incidentally, a screening of it after us, half an hour after this show's finished. This is the new film by Harry Wootliff. This is the trailer, and I think it's a really great film. Take a look at this.
Kate. It's like you're on another bloody planet.
Okay, so it usually takes about 3 to 5 weeks for a claim to be processed. Do you have any other questions?
What are you doing for lunch?
Take your tights off.
Do you have a girlfriend?
Are you interrogating me? How come you're always like this?
Like what? So you're gonna rescue him, are you?
You need to find your tribe.
You're my tribe. I thought you might have called.
I've been busy.
You just disappeared. Don't know what's wrong with you.
I think men find you difficult, that's
what. Susan?
No, it's important she knows these things. She's all on her own.
We're calling you.
I wish we could stay like this forever.
It's out on April the 1st. It's really terrific. Please welcome our first guest, writer and director Harry Wootliff. Few days ago, and I thought it was really powerful and terrific. Great performances. I love the way it looks. Tell me where this story comes from.
It's kind of inspired by a book, I guess. Kind of used a blueprint of the book, and then took the character, maybe not so much the narrative. Took the atmosphere and the sort of overwhelming feeling of addiction to someone, and kind of ran with that.
Okay, so the story is two characters, one of whom we meet at the very beginning, who seems to have some kind of fragility about her, and then she suddenly meets this character played by Tom Burke, who is alluring and sexy and dangerous, but clearly fundamentally untrustworthy, and then she is magnetically drawn to him. Tell me about casting those two actors.
Well, Ruth brought the book to me, so Ruth came with the project.
Oh, fine, so she cast you.
Yeah, so that wasn't too bad. And, you know, obviously Ruth is amazing and sort of very intelligent, sensitive, charismatic woman, actress. Yeah. And I guess for me it was finding someone who matched her intelligence. And it was always a question of, like, how good looking is he? Like, what's she drawn to? And I needed him to be, for me, was someone who felt enigmatic, who wasn't exactly who they appeared to be, someone who you couldn't kind of quite work out. And I felt like Tom was very different to Blonde in a way. Okay. And I quite like casting in that, in a way where I'm kind of casting against type.
I've never met, Ruth Wilson came on the show when Dark River was out. I've never met Tom Burke. What is he like? Is he on screen? He kind of exudes charisma and danger, and I don't know.
He's very really me and Ruth had a kind of like threesome date with him to cast him. So me and Ruth kind of like nervously awaited his arrival, and he was late. And then we was probably both kind of quite beguiled by him. He's very he's very sort of sensitive. The dating tips. He's very, he's a very good listener. He's very attentive.
Can I just say, I've been married for 30 years. Dating
just in
tips
case,
are lost
just in
on
case.
Me.
He's very sensitive, and he's very, he's witty and clever, and sort of has quite a gentleness about him, and an intelligence. And he's very not. I mean, I think we've all got a bit of Blonde in us, but he's not like Blonde at all.
Okay. Can I show a clip from, this is from about halfway, maybe two-thirds of the way through the film, in which they've started having a relationship, and then he's just been unreliable, and he disappears with her car. This is a scene in which she's coming back home after a date which hasn't worked out very well, and it's pouring rain, and he turns up outside her house, and immediately she's back under his spell. Okay, so let's have a look at this.
You look nice. I like your dress. Get your skates on then. Party. My car's fucked. Can we use yours?
Yeah.
I used to have an imaginary friend, a horse called Dunlop.
Is that the trainers?
Yeah.
In a way, the problem is, I show that, and actually what I want to do is I want to just watch the film again, because it's really tactile, and I was knocked out by it. Can you tell me something about how important music is to the way, because the first film you made, Only You, which I loved, and I know you'd done shorts before that, it had this brilliant scene in it involving Elvis Costello's I Want You, which is, for very personal reasons, a very important song to me, and I hate it when songs that I love turn up in films, so it's like, no, excuse me, that's mine, would you mind staying away from it? But it's a wonderful scene, and during it, Josh O'Connor does this little kind of this dance that I'm doing a very bad impression of, you know. And in that, the music and the dancing is telling you the story rather than dancing. So tell me a little bit about your relation to music and filmmaking.
Especially in this film, music played a big part. Not only for not to give away the end, but there's a moment where Ruth dances towards the end. To a track that I guess is similar to Only You, where it's kind of the track, it is the scene in a way. Mm-hmm. I very much on this in this film, my poor editor who's here today, I say poor because it was, the sound was so demanding on us in the edit. I wanted the film to have a lot of music. That's kind of how I envisaged it. So basically you don't have your a composer there, so you're finding temp tracks, so you're in a way you're composing your own music by splicing bits of music from from other things that, you know, that exist in the world together to create a soundtrack. And actually this scene in particular was a nightmare, because it was all about kind of blending the sound that was in the party with soundtrack, and it was really, really difficult to do, really difficult to do in the edit, and then subsequently really difficult to do in the sound edit. I guess I just find music is just so it just transcends, how do you use the word transcend feelings, transcend, yeah. It just takes you somewhere. And
do you play?
No, so maybe it's my way of kind of expressing myself through music. And very much, I work really closely with the composer, so actually it was really bringing back memories of, I love the end of that, of the soundtrack, where there's this kind of plucking sound,
yeah,
which really
yeah.
became like a motif. And
your composer on this is?
Oh my God, I've suddenly forgotten my composer's name. I remember in a minute.
Come back.
Yeah.
Because it's Emily Levinas Farouche on the first film,
yes.
who did such a beautiful end track for Only You, which I have played the life out of on Scala Radio, which is sort of really fabulous. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. So yeah.
And he sort of played these notes on the piano that he made into this plucking sound, and then he processed them, put them through this process where they kind of repeated over each other.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was brilliant, because I could kind of be there and go, yeah, can you do the plucking thing again? Can you put more plucking on top of more plucking? And so you really have, it's sort of like, I'm going to remember his name in a minute.
It's not Harry Escott, is it?
No.
Read it off the poster.
Alex Baranowski, thank you.
Oh yeah, read it off the poster.
Alex.
And edited by.
Alex was incredibly generous and talented and collaborative. So yeah, in a way, you sort of get to compose with someone who can compose.
Yeah.
What
about directing the actors? Because the thing that's beautiful about Only You and about this is you really do get a sense of the spark of the relationship. And, you know, as a critic, you end up saying things like, you know, intimate handheld camera work and unobtrusive, you know, all those things which are basically phrases. If you ever read in a review, you know, unobtrusive direction or intimate handheld, it means I don't know how to describe this. This is a phrase that I am using. How do you get the actors in a place in which, but without being in the middle of it? Because all that stuff looks very close up, but obviously you're far enough away that they're able to perform.
Yeah, and I mean, hats off to them that you are in their face, really. I mean, there's a circus around them. You know, mm-hmm. they're doing things that are really intimate, and there's lots of people around them, looking at them, pointing things at them. You know, it's not easy. I guess directing for me is it's interesting because Ruth and Tom work in quite different ways as well.
Oh, yeah.
It was interesting because I found that it was really difficult to talk to Tom and Ruth at the same time, because in a way Ruth's got her version of the story, Tom's got his version of the story, and then I've got a kind of overview of the story, and I feel for me I have to kind of love all the characters, and so I know what the good is in Blonde. I'm not saying he is good in any way, but I know what the good is in him. So when Tom's asking me, well, why am I doing this? I kind of have to explain, you know, his background, psychologically, where he's coming from, because obviously no one thinks of themselves as bad. So how does he do bad things or say mean things? What, you know, why is he doing that? So, yeah. So then Ruth's listening and going, I don't agree. I mean, he's just awful. It's like, I know he's awful. But I've just got to, so I really felt like I wanted to kind of split them up, and we had quite an interesting situation when we got to I'm embarking on a story now. When we got to Spain, actually, where you know he loses his allure and he loses his power, and it was really interesting seeing psychologically how Tom kind of changed. Like he really became kind of like quite down, you know. Like I don't know, it's quite hard playing somebody who's the light isn't shining on them anymore.
I mean, he is fantastically charismatic, and I do think that the relationship between the two of them works rather brilliantly. I asked you to choose a film that had influenced you, a film that had changed your life, and you chose something which I think is, you can see, or at least I think as a critic, I can see stylistic connections. You made two choices. Tell me what the two were.
The two was the Decalogue, which is TV series really, and then Three Colours Blue.
Yeah.
And then when I watched it was actually brilliant watching Decalogue again, because I was sort of afraid that I'd go back to it and think, actually what did I connect with, and I sort of had to submit my my recommendation before I'd had a chance. Then over the weekend, I kind of watched it again, and actually it's brilliant. But then with Three Colors Blue, the opening of that film is my favorite opening. And I think you actually see when you watch Decalogue how actually Decalogue leads into Three Colors Blue.
Okay.
And I really, I could also see, I was like, oh yeah, it did. It really did genuinely kind of influence me. These, I kind of went on a sort of journey with the director. I sort of got into all his stuff around the time I started directing.
We're going to play the opening from Three Colors Blue, and it was when this came up and they said, oh, there's two choices. I said, well, do Three Colors Blue. I remember seeing Three Colors Blue in the press screening, and after the opening of it, literally being like that, and it stayed with me for ages afterwards. So I'm very glad you chose it, because it gives us a chance to show this. I imagine many of you will know the Three Colors trilogy. If you don't, this isn't a spoiler, because it's the very, very beginning of Three Colors Blue. And it is, I think, stylistically very interesting, particularly in terms of the clip that we've just seen. To have a look at this, this is the opening to Kieslowski's Three Colors Blue.
Diana. Allez, monte.
So from a filmmaker's point of view, tell me what you get from that opening sequence.
I think the sound is incredible, isn't it?
Sound design is amazing.
It's the sound, I guess it's because it's visual, there's no dialogue. I think there's a sort of sense of impending doom, but you don't really know why. It's just sort of stunningly beautiful and atmospheric. I wish I'd made it.
Do you go back to films, like when you were making True Things, do you go back and watch other movies for references?
Yeah, I try to kind of, I sometimes sort of latch onto something and then just keep watching it. So it becomes something that when I'm stuck, I can just put it on, or a piece of music, I can just put it on, and then instead of kind of Googling like something, useless, sort of keeps me focused. And also, so it becomes, I don't know, something that's sort of very sort of sends me into a sense of daydreaming, rather than, because I know it so well. Actually, I watch this a lot because I know it so well that I'm not, I don't know, it just sort of seems to make my brain start to think in pictures and sound and music.
Do you show those films to your other collaborators? Like, do you go to your cinematographer and go, I'm thinking of this or I'm thinking of that?
I mean, I might take scenes or give references, and definitely with my editor I sort of gave a list of things that I loved that I thought were relevant in some way.
And when the film's finished and it's out, as I said, this is coming out in April now, April the 1st, but there is a screening immediately afterwards. If you're not doing anything straight afterwards, do go and see it. I mean, I'm such a big fan, and I'm so impressed by it. Do you care how it's received critically? Does it?
I care deeply.
Do you read reviews?
I read reviews. I can't help but read reviews. And then I fixate on everything bad. But, you know, like...
Do you do the thing about if somebody says, this is great, this is great, this is great, this is great, not so much, this is great, this is great, this is great, all you hear is the not so much?
I just see the not so much, and then I lie in bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and argue my point of why it, of why they're wrong. Yeah, I mean, it's so exposing. And also, you make it so that people understand what you're trying to say, and so you connect with people. And if you're not connecting and you're not communicating, you know, it's disheartening. You don't make it just so you can enjoy it. And I guess the times you find out if you've connected or if people are moved by it is either in Q&As or through critics. And it's really exposing. I mean, I don't even tweet. I go into cold sweat like sending a text. So I find it embarrassing. I find it like mortifying. Yeah. Do you ever... No pressure. But I find it, yeah, it's
no,
like,
I've already told you I love the film. I mean, it's absolutely fine. I mean, in fact, I did a Q&A with you and Josh when Only You was... Because if I have a confession to make, which I probably told you before, that when I first saw Only You, because I didn't know anything about... I tend not to read stuff before I see films. I tend to see films cold, which I know is... you know, it's just what I like to do. And I just saw the name Harry Wootliff. And the first time I ever played a piece of music from the film on Scala Radio, I said his, because Harry, I didn't know that you were you. So I loved the film before I knew anything about who it was that made it. But do you ever do the thing about writing to critics and saying, you've got this strange...
No, do people do that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, then I'm going to write one.
My favourite one is Orlando Bloom's mum wrote to me. Yeah.
Do you write back?
No!
No. Exactly. No. I don't think it's going to...
James Corden's parents got in touch as well. I mean, I've got a thing with annoying people's parents. I don't know why that is. When I was a kid, my best friend was a guy called Nick Cooper, and we were round at his house, and his dad was being a bit offy with me, and Nick said... I know this has got nothing to do with film. Nick said... He said, what is it? Why don't you like Mark? He said, he just looks tired all the time. You know, so, but I mean, I just wonder about that. I mean, I've written books and I've had good reviews and I've had bad reviews. Yeah. And I know that I can't remember a single good review, but I can remember every single word.
I literally kind of scan really fast until I get something that bothers me.
Yeah. So, look, I wish you every success with the film because I think it's terrific. I think the performances are great. And I was, I really want to just watch it again. So it opens on April the 1st.
Yeah.
But there is this screening afterwards. You're doing do an introduction for it.
And okay. A Q&A, yeah.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome.
Harry Wootliff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We have a sort of news section in the show. Are we doing the mic? Where's is it, Heather? Are you here? Are we doing the microphone-y thing?
Well, I don't think they set them up.
So that will be no. Yeah. Heather's my producer and my agent. She doesn't know the word no. So the answer to a question with the answer is no is, well, it doesn't look like they've done the... You mean no? Yeah, okay, fine. This is the news section of the show. Something happened, weirdly enough, almost exactly the same time that we were on for the last show. This is why we didn't do it, because it happened on the same day and I didn't know till the day afterwards. We lost Doug Trumbull, which is a real shame. Doug Trumbull was one of my favourite filmmakers. Doug Trumbull was a guy who worked in visual effects. He did the visual effects for 2001, although Stanley Kubrick took credit for all of them. He did the visual effects for Blade Runner. He was the guy who, you know, made Blade Runner look the way it did. And he also directed a couple of my, you know, most important films. Silent Running, which, as you all know, I've gone on about over and over again. I bought one of the first soundtrack albums I ever bought was Silent Running. And I just loved that film from when I was a kid. I ended up writing a book about it, published by the BFI, probably available in the bookshop, an absolute snip at like $6.99. I mean, just everything you never wanted to know about Silent Running, but was scared I was going to tell you anyway. And he also made a film called Brainstorm, which nearly didn't get finished, but did, and I think is a really great film. So, look, indulge me, because Doug Trumbull was such a great filmmaker, such a great technician,
and a really, really lovely person. I met him when we were doing a documentary about Blade Runner, and I just sort of basically fell on my knees and said, I just love Silent Running and I'm so sorry. And he was just really kind and really friendly, and he's a really great loss. So I want to show you this scene from Silent Running. The story of Silent Running is Bruce Dern is lost in space with the last of the Earth's forests. That's the plot. His only friends are these robots called drones, which are played by actors, rather brilliantly played by actors. And because he doesn't have any other company, he programs the drones not to be worker drone robots, but to be companions for him. You've probably all seen it. One of the greatest things about it is it makes no sense at all. The film makes absolutely no sense at all, but it doesn't matter because it makes emotional sense. You know, if all the forests have gone from the Earth, how come the Earth hasn't just suffocated? Yeah, well, there we are. You know, they're on a spaceship. It's got gravity. Yeah, well, there we are. This is a lovely, lovely scene, and I'm just playing this because I love Doug Trumbull so much and I love his film so much, so indulge me. This is a lovely scene from Silent Running.
Well, what are you doing? You just threw down three kings. You're nuts, you know that? Well, your hand is obviously dead, and let's see what you got here. Well, he's got trash, so obviously I'm the winner with three sevens. Thank you, boys. I'm sorry. You got to be quicker than that. You got to get up in the morning to beat old Freeman, let me tell you. Early in the morning. It's all mine. Now, this time we'll play another hand, and I don't want any mistakes. I mean, it's up to you, you know. We're not playing for 3-1 oil here, you know. We're playing for money.
So the other big news thing is it's awards season, as you all know. They've had a new Girls on Film Awards, which just happened a couple of days ago. To tell us all about it, please welcome Anna Smith.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Anna, how you doing?
I'm really well. How are you doing?
I'm very good.
Good.
Yeah, and tell us about the Girls on Film Awards. What are they? What drove them?
So on March the 2nd, we decided to have the Girls on Film Awards after 3.5 years of doing the podcast.
Very successful podcast.
Why, thank you. Which aims to shine a light on female film critics and female filmmakers. So we got some of the best female film critics in the UK to nominate films that had come out in the 3 years that Girls on Film had been going.
Okay.
And then obviously we nominated and awarded winners based on fantastic female representation, amazing work, the films we love that maybe have been overlooked by some other award ceremonies.
Okay, so from the last 3 years, so basically from the length of time that Girls on Film have been going.
Yes, since myself and Hedda Archbold, who aforementioned, who is
Hedda,
here tonight,
who doesn't know how to say no in any language at all. And there we are. So there was 10 awards in total.
That's right.
I've asked you to choose 4 to give us a kind of flavour of the awards. If people want to hear the whole thing, is it available as a podcast?
It is just out now as a podcast on all major platforms, Spotify, Apple, etc.
Okay, so
you
the
can
girls
listen
on,
to it.
The Girls on Film podcast, everybody should subscribe to. It's really terrific.
So the first category I'm going to talk about
is
ensemble acting. So this is obviously, we wanted to, rather than pick best actor, best actress, to reward a group who've done an amazing work. Should we have a look at a clip which demonstrates?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hand sanitizer, chapstick, college IDs. Now, Mace, listen, it is very important that you keep this safe.
Oh! I want to fix him, you know?
I know, but there are some people you just can't.
If I could fuck a car? Fuck this car.
This is fucking it.
This is fucking it.
Stick with me, baby.
They're turning oppression into spectacle. Let's make a spectacle of our own.
Right, seriously, put your hands up. And stop stepping on the thing. You look so nice.
And the winner is Booksmart.
We're gonna get to Nick so late.
It's fine, everybody shows up to parties late. It's like, it's cooler to be late. We're gonna arrive right at the crest. Before you know it, you'll be neck deep in Ryan.
Neck deep in what direction?
Can you tell me?
I don't know. I don't know anything. This is like your nightmare about having to land a commercial airliner, but much, much worse.
I mean, is it?
So that was for female friendship on screen, of course, rather somber, but a lot of the same films were nominated because we love to see women together on screen, young, old, everything in between, celebrating the relationships with each other. And as you can see from those clips,
and a popular choice.
Absolutely. And we had Best Documentary.
Okay.
And what a powerful year for documentaries. I mean, just this past year, but from when we started, some of the most, I think, extraordinary documentaries ever made came up. So let's have a look at the documentary reel.
Okay.
These people are crazy, you know? I mean, in a good way.
Fifty of us lot get on a bus, and the whole world knows we're lesbians.
मुझसे तो पूछते हैं तो मैं भी पूछ लेती हूँ कि आप कौन से कास्ट के हैं अब वो कहते हैं मैं ब्राह्मण हूँ तो मैं भी कह देती हूँ मैं भी ब्राह्मण हूँ
And the winner is for Sama.
Sama. Sama.
Sama. عملت هالفيلم مشانك بدي اياك تفهم شو اللي كنا عم نقاتل مشانه
The director, Wael Al-Khatib, came to accept the award in person.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, we actually had a lot of winners and nominees attending and made a very powerful speech. So.
And, of course, the score for that was done by Nanita Desai, who does such a brilliant job, and I know has been on the podcast before.
She has, and she also won Best Composer, and she came along to accept that award.
Good for her, because she is such a great composer, so that's really good. Really good.
She?
I should also say, since Cow, I feel really embarrassed to say this, since Cow, I've sort of stopped drinking milk and...
Yes, me too. Yeah.
I mean, no, but I am still a fish and hypocrite. I feel, you know, I still do the thing, but since Cow, the dairy is going.
It is a very, very powerful film. We chose another award which was a little bit different. It raises a bit of a laugh, but it actually has a serious purpose. The award is Best Female Orgasm on Film. So the idea is that actually, you know, sexual pleasure is often shown from the male gaze, and perhaps women are
objectified. I don't know why you looked at me when you said that. It was like...
Staring at you, Mark. I'm not blaming you. You're an ally, as we know. And in fact, we did have an award for male allies as well. But yeah, the Best Female Orgasm Award is a fun one, but a serious one to show, you know, responsible portrayals of female pleasure and ways that, you know, films that advance the plot in the sex scenes, they're not just gratuitous.
Yeah.
Should we have a look at
yeah, absolutely.
That? Yeah,
absolutely. Sag, was wovon 93% der deutschen Frauen träumen?
Dann kommst du vielleicht selber drauf, zu welcher Gruppe ich gehöre.
Zu den 7%?
We were a part of each other. Flesh of each other's flesh, which we so took for granted that we never thought of the flesh.
I'm your man.
Ich will jetzt nicht tanzen. Ich will jetzt wissen, wie das ist, mit dir zu vögeln. Was soll das?
Du solltest jetzt schlafen.
So it's probably worth if you haven't seen... If you haven't seen I'm Your Man, it's worth mentioning that Dan Stephen plays a robot. So the idea is that he's a kind of love bot. So it's a very, very interesting sexual dynamic.
And but also, each one of those films is individually terrific. I mean, what a fantastic selection of films to be able to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been such a joy to celebrate so many incredible films. All the films have been featured on the podcast, and we've often had the filmmakers and the cast on the pod. So it's been
so
amazing.
We watched Female Friendship. Do we have the ensemble cast that I think we skipped round that the first time round?
We have got some luck.
Do you want to?
Yeah, let's have
yes,
a look.
Please, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, yes. So, great film, sir.
When would I have had a chance to call the police, Henry?
If you call the police, we're totally entering a cycle of abuse, Henry.
That is 100% your fault.
No one makes their own way, least of all a woman. You'll need to marry well.
But you are not married, aren't you?
Well, that's because I'm rich.
Are y'all seeing this? I'm going to be the new Picasso.
东方人. 是把生命看作是集体的家庭
This bitch with a nappy ass hair was up in my face.
Word.
And the winner is Rox.
So welcome to the future.
And then I'm going to
Rox, can you do my eyebrows? Or just do my makeup?
Sorry, Agnes. I don't really have stuff for your color because I never get white clients.
rocks. Is such a great film. And I remember Sarah Gavron particularly asking that it was never referred to as Sarah Gavron's Rocks, because she said it's not just the ensemble cast, it's the ensemble everything. And I thought, I'm just trying to remember the last time that a director didn't want to take credit for a movie. I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
She's so humble, and I think she came on stage with Anna Enriquez, her associate director, and said exactly that, that everyone, it was a very collaborative process, and that's something we love to celebrate on Girls on Film. And the cast played an unusual part, I think, actually informing the characters with all the workshopping that they did, so it was lovely.
So congratulations on the awards. People can hear the whole 10 awards on the Girls on Film podcast, which, as I said, you really should subscribe to because it's fabulous. Tell us what you're doing now, because you're involved in getting a film re-released.
Well, International Women's Day is approaching, and we've been doing 365 days of film recommendations on our social media, mostly female-led projects. And one of those films recently was Atlantis, which is an incredible Ukrainian film, actually set in a future after the war with Russia. And it's an incredibly powerful film that had a small release last year, but I'm talking to distributors, I'm really hoping that people can actually get to see this film, because it seems so powerful and so relevant to the moment.
So you're looking to get it back into cinemas?
I hope so, yeah, or a streaming service, but it just should be something that everyone watches, you know. And this director also had a film, Reflection, which also dealt with the war, and that was in Venice this year. So it just seems like something that everyone wants to engage with, everyone wants to support, and it was an almost a sadly prescient sort of futuristic film. It was very powerful.
In the 3 years that you've been doing the Girls on Film podcast, has the world changed for the better?
Yes, I do think it has.
Good.
I think, you know, you're saying Jane Campion will probably win Best Director.
Do you think she will?
I think she will, yeah, absolutely. And now I'm looking and commenting on different award ceremonies, more high-profile award ceremonies. They're making an obvious concerted effort to be more inclusive and diverse and to recognise talents that may have been overlooked. So it's getting there, but we've still got a way to go.
Okay, yeah. It is good to have some good news in these particularly dark times, so that's great. Thank you so much for coming on. As I said, check out the awards on the Girls on Film podcast. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that was the first half of the most recent MK3D live show, recorded at the BFI South Bank in London. If you like the sound of the live shows and you'd like to come along, well, they happen every month, and you can get information and tickets from the BFI website. On next week's podcast, we'll hear from Monica Dolan and Rachel Zegler. I hope you'll join me then. In the meantime, stay safe and keep watching the skies.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.